seen Bartolo Colon swing a bat. Like, I can handle growth, but I can't.
Surviving Grady podcast. Today's podcast is another in our series of talking with people about 2004, and this being the 10-year anniversary of the Red Sox World Series victory in 2004, we felt it appropriate to sit down and chat. Actually, I'm standing up, so not really sitting down, but just chat with some Boston and Boston area folk on the topic of 2004 to get their perspectives and on the games themselves. And also how Red Sox Nation has changed for the better since that time. As anyone who's read our blog knows, 2003 was really the genesis of our website in response to Grady Little's unfortunate management of his pitchers in Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS. But our faith was rewarded in 2004 with the first of three World Series victories over the past decade. We are very happy to have a special guest with us today. Our guest to discuss 2004 is Amara Grotzky. She is the online sports editor for the New York Daily News. She's also written about sports for the Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, ESPN New York. She's also worked for the Boston Red Sox. So this is Surviving Grady is slowly but surely getting our way inside the Fenway elite. Now we've got someone who actually worked for the Red Sox for a while. So
yeah, it feels like barely, but I was there.
Fantastic. All right, well, we're slowly knocking down the walls here. But at any rate, we're very happy to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And now you have a very interesting case for us because you lived in Boston, born in Boston, but lived the big chunk of your life in New York and currently, of course, work in New York for the New York Daily News. So your perspective is of particular interest to us because you are there every day working amongst
enemy
them.
Enemy territory.
Exactly.
Working amongst them, yes.
Exactly. It's like they live, you know, you're walking around them every day. And
blending
and
in.
Exactly.
So. I feel like I'm one of those people in a zombie movie who just needs to blend in. So I'm just like aimlessly walking around and pretending to just blend in with the masses, but really I'm embedded here in enemy territory.
That's perfect. Get the Nomar jersey on it. The business outfit, I'm sure. So,
yeah, I've gotten into a few arguments, I'll call them, in the city because of wearing Red Sox shirts or Patriot stuff or anything. I mean, obviously the Red Sox stuff goes without being said, but also just, oh God, you know, being here for a couple of Giants Super Bowls wasn't pretty, but I've survived so far, so that's good.
Excellent. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about 2004, but before we do that, just for the sake of context, we will talk a little bit about 2003. And, of course, 2003, a devastating time for most Red Sox fans. Not just devastating because the idea for this blog was hatched, but also because of the 2003 ALCS and how that ended.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, as a Red Sox fan, where were you? It's almost like the Kennedy assassination. Where were you when this happened? Where were you when the Red Sox, when Aaron Boone went yard, when the Red Sox lost Game 7 of the ALCS? And can you just talk a little bit about that and your feelings at the time?
Yeah, I mean, what's funny is that I've been thinking about, obviously, that day. And, you know, a lot of people process tragedy differently. You know, some people it's so vivid, and other things, it's, you know, it's kind of blurry, but what I remember is just feeling numb. I was at, I don't even remember what it was for, but I was at my aunt's house for a family gathering. I must have like 50 cousins at this point. So it was probably like a christening or a something or a, you know, somebody turning 80. I honestly have no idea. But, someone might die soon. Let's have a get together. I honestly don't know. But it was a gathering there. And I remember, a lot of my family, they're Red Sox fans, but they're not, you know, hardcore Red Sox fans. So obviously it was on and on all the TVs. But a few of us who actually had been literally, you know, following along that season were trying to be kind of polite, but also kind of trying to say, like, hey, you know, this is more important than family, so why don't you get out of my face?
priorities here. Let's get priorities
straight. Being at a TV and just... being there with a few of my family members, the ones that, you know, wanted to watch the game, and it happening, and just, and by it, I mean, you know, obviously the Aaron Boone home run, because why do we ever want to actually say that sentence out loud? And I just, I remember it happening, and then I remember just thinking, like, that didn't happen. Like I wasn't even overly angry right away. I just remember being so shocked by it, which I don't really know why. You know, at this point, it's kind of like, why would you be shocked by anything? But I just remember thinking, like, that didn't happen. You know, like, that was just a dream, and then tomorrow it's going to be fine, and this didn't happen. I felt like I was one of those people who was just told, like, you know, like, I'm sorry, like, your father's passed away. And, like, instead of just breaking down and crying, I'm just like, uh-huh, and then just keeps doing whatever I was doing, and everyone's looking at you like, are you processing what I'm saying? Someone in your family is dead. I think I just kind of kept going on, and then over time I got more angry and sad and all of those things, but it took a while to process. I don't know for you if it was just more sudden, just wanting to stab someone, but I was just so shocked.
Yeah, I think shocked is a great word for it, and I think you bring up a good point where it's like these things shouldn't surprise you, because at that time, all we knew as Red Sox fans was that eventually this is all going to go to shit. It's going to happen. You knew it was going to happen.
Right.
And I think that was how I felt.
You usually for the punch to, like, you know, like the balls, basically. You're just waiting for it.
Exactly. You kind of brace yourself. You know it's coming.
Right. But they tricked you into thinking that it wasn't coming. And you're just, and a small part of me is impressed. I'm like, wow, you got me again. Like, you guys, you know. I mean, that was a good one. You know, you really had me going there. So, because I feel like so much of being a Red Sox fan is just questioning everything constantly. And just even when you think you're experiencing joy, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, don't get used to this. You know, this isn't going to last. So just take it in for a minute, but don't get comfortable.
Well, after that happened, would you say that if in your mind you were convinced that you would probably never – I mean, my attitude with that team was, if ever there was a team – and I lived through Danny Darwin, Dante Bichette, these guys that I would just say, oh, this is all we needed. Now that we've got them, we're golden. But
right.
After 2003, I thought they were probably the best-equipped team to do it. They had that bizarre camaraderie. They had Kevin Millar. They had Ortiz, Manny,
right.
Pedro, all the chips. Did you
right. – Isn't it so, just to stop for a second, isn't it just so funny and just to say out loud, like, they had Kevin Millar, so I felt like they were going to do something? Because on paper, like, there's not much. I mean, when I think of Kevin Millar, I just think of his mouth and then people being like, remember when he opened his stance one time? Like, wow, you know, good for him. But, I mean, it's just funny because I feel like he's such an integral part of those teams. But then when you really think about, like, Kevin Millar, it's funny, though, because he did bring, like, a certain something, which I think most people outside of Boston probably thought he was super annoying and hated, but I just, like, I just ate it up. It felt like everything was coming together.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Millar, too, because I will admit to not knowing much about him when he was with the Marlins, but I do remember before the Red Sox got him, I believe the Marlins had sold him part and parcel to some Japanese team, and I believe,
yeah.
and I drink a lot, so my memory is hazy, but I do recall...
Me too, yeah.
I do recall the Red Sox almost...
Right now, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it would certainly make it a lot easier, but I remember the Red Sox getting into sort of a heated, like, there was some concern if the Japanese team would let him go, and the Red Sox were concerned, and they were trying, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know much about this guy, but we're practically going to war with Japan over him, so he's got to be something.
Right. He's got to be great.
He's got to be something. And then, you know, and he ended up becoming one of those guys. Like, I mean, I was watching an interview the other night, and I'm not trying to equate Kevin Millar with Jake Peavy, but Jake
right.
Peavy was only with Boston for basically a year. He came last July, and he just left the other day. But I was watching
right.
an interview with Mike Napoli, and he was discussing – and Mike Napoli looked like someone just dragged his dog off a cliff. He was morose. He was,
right.
he was a real great guy, And, of course, we don't see what goes on behind the scenes. To me, Jake Peavy was – I mean, it was certainly great to see his enthusiasm last year. He looked genuinely – odd to be a part of this, and obviously Bob Melancon's a great guy. But there's that clubhouse element that we don't see. On the surface, a 1-9 pitcher, but to them, someone who made it made the workplace better for them. So I guess that's kind of the Kevin Millar factor, I'm guessing.
Or for all we know, he's just like terrible at poker, and they just kept taking his money, and they're devastated that he's gone. You know, but no, I mean Kevin Millar had that certain something about him. I mean, the other thing I think of when I think of Kevin Millar is just how ridiculous it was when he was with the Orioles, and then he went on television cheering for the Red Sox. Like, I remember they had him on for like the Fox broadcast. They did like a little like interview with him, and he started a "Let's Go Red Sox" chant. I'm like, dude, you're with the Orioles now. I mean, I'm loving this, but if I were the Orioles, I'd be like, come on, buddy, you know, can you give us a break? It was awesome.
I think after he won the World Series ring, he did kind of embrace the whole not giving a fuck attitude. I think he really
did. Yeah. He caught on.
Yeah. That's a good
like,
point.
Whatever.
You raise an excellent point, though, because I do believe he, I think in the midst of all that, he came back and threw out a first pitch for one of our games when he was
did.
In, you know,
he
in
did.
One of those years. So when you're Kevin Millar, you know, you get away with certain things that the common man
I know,
aspire
drinking
to.
Whiskey in the morning, you know, if only I were Kevin Millar. you know? But,
and just for the whiskey part, as far as I'm concerned, the other stuff I could take.
I don't even need to be beloved. I really just want it to be okay to be drinking whiskey. Right. You would just drink whiskey. That's what's so funny, too, is that I know this is kind of off topic, but just people are making such a fuss over, like, oh, my God, chicken and beer, that's so bizarre, that's so terrible. Like, how could they do that? Remember when drinking was awesome a few years ago in 2004 when they were just taking shots of Jack Daniels all the time? Because why not? You know, it's just it's funny how winning and losing changes how acceptable drinking is in the clubhouse.
That's an excellent point. If chicken and beer had surfaced in 2005, about 2004, we as the fans probably would have made sure that the constant flow of poultry and alcohol was never ending. You know, we'd make sure they had discipline.
Didn't Kevin Millar have a KFC commercial? Did I make that up at one point?
I think you're right about that. I think he did have some kind of a chicken strips.
Yeah, I think that would have been something that we didn't just kind of remember. I feel like that would have been a common thing for like 2005. Just Kevin Millar just like promoting chicken, fried chicken, and then I'm sure their Jack Daniels would have gotten involved somehow and beer. So
I do remember he gave himself the single greatest nickname that I'd ever seen applied to a player is when he was now of course 2005 was kind of a rough year for him because I know he was platooned and he didn't really have a lot of. He wasn't bringing much to the party to begin with in terms of play,
right.
And it kind of the skill set.
People started to realize that he wasn't actually hitting.
Yeah, exactly. after the honeymoon, we've won the World Series, and then oh wait a minute, what's going on here?
Terry Francona sat down and said, "I have to look over some numbers for the past few seasons, and I don't know if anyone noticed this, but Kevin Millar's just been talking for a few years. He hasn't even actually been really doing anything. I don't know if anyone's caught on to this, but
but he actually called himself, he referred to himself as El Bencho. He was upset that he had been benched, and I thought that was the greatest thing. A couple of people around here latched onto that. I thought that was phenomenal, but certainly he certainly had the. I don't think it was anything was I don't think anyone was letting him in on anything when he realized that what he brought to the party was the fact that he kind of raised this camaraderie and got people rah-rah. And
The thing that I love about Kevin Millar is just that behind all of the, like, craziness, and he was just, like, very self-aware. Like, this is my role. You know, especially even, I don't know if whenever you're down, which is, like, every other week you or day, you ever just put in, like, faith rewarded because you need to, like, feel something good.
Right.
And during that DVD, I'm pretty sure there's a point where he's just kind of saying, you know, like, well, you know, I'm just a guy that comes in and just says funny things, and I don't really do much of anything else, but, you know, I just keep things loose. And so he's very aware of the fact that's his, you know, even more so than, you know, with his bat, he just kind of brought this relaxed presence, and obviously being able to draw a walk.
Yes, exactly.
And also, and not swinging. But again, he didn't use his bat, and that's why we love him, because he didn't swing.
Exactly. You think instantly of that line in Moneyball where they're going through the players and they say, why do we like him? He gets on base. You know, that's it.
Right, like exactly.
You know, he's the guy who gets on base.
I don't know if he talked his way on base, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we thought it's like, you know, again, getting off topic, but Mark Bellhorn. I mean, didn't he lead in, like, strikeouts and walks? I'm like, can someone just tell him to stop swinging? Like,
yeah.
just stand there? Just, you know, just half of this is really good, this whole walking thing.
It's just showing up is half of it.
Yeah, just stop swinging the bat, and I think we've got something here.
Kevin, and again, I don't want to go too far down the Kevin Millar rabbit hole, which would be an awesome name. Which would be an awesome name for a band, by the way, if anyone was looking for one.
I know. I think Kevin Millar would like that.
He certainly would.
He'd probably do like a guest appearance.
His now famous oration, the old "Don't Let Us Win Tonight," that's become like the Gettysburg Address for an entire. It's revered in the same. I mean, it's interesting to look back on this now, and I think. Even things like that kind of help raise the mythology, the Kevin Millar mythology, if you will. That was a pretty ballsy proclamation, and it's so interesting to look at it after the fact, on the cusp of a game that would have been, had we lost it, would have been probably the single, it would have made the 2003 ALCS pale in comparison, because at least we won a couple of those games.
Yeah.
We brought it to Game 7.
Right.
This would have been the ultimate Yankees stepping on our nuts moment. It would have been insane. And rather than take the approach of, well, we get out there and swing the bat, he's jumping around telling, don't let us win tonight because this will happen tomorrow. You know, we get Petey, we get Schilling. And in retrospect, you look at it and, like, maybe that is kind of what got some of them over the hump of, you know, or kept them all from just drinking themselves into oblivion the night before Game 4. So.
I know. I mean, and again, going back to this, going and watching the 2004 DVD sometime, I have a bunch of them, is that little compilation of the, you know, Don't Let Us Win Tonight thing, where he's talking to, like, everyone, you know, he's talking to Dan Shaughnessy, then he's talking to, like, a Red Sox coach, then he's, like, at a, you know, like, he could be like, at the bookstore telling someone, like, he's just talking to anybody he sees, you know, just like, don't let us win tonight. And they're like, dude, I don't know who you are. You know?
Get off my lawn.
Who are you? Why do you smell so much of, why do you just reek of alcohol? He was just telling everybody. And it's funny watching that. And I'm glad that they captured that because, you know, it's true. It was definitely something where he's saying, you know, we've got nothing to lose, which I think sometimes, you know, that's not just how that team felt at that moment. I mean, I think that's how a lot of Red Sox fans felt at that moment. You know, it's like, here we go again. I mean, we can't be any more humiliated, probably, or embarrassed, or feel any worse. So let's just, you know, just pray that we win. And I'm not religious, but, like, prayer was in my thoughts, you know? I mean, you know how no one's religious until they think that, like, they really want something?
Exactly. When you need something, then God's just,
it's
all
like,
right, man.
Right. You're like, I know you're probably not up there, and this sounds really stupid, but if you are, and I've just been really wrong about everything, can you just spare me and just give me this, like, one little thing that I want? But I feel like that's how I felt at that moment. Like, just, you know, I mean, because we really thought going into that series in 2004, the ALCS, we're like, watch us get you back for last year. And then, you know, after each game, you're like, oh, I guess. So we're not doing that. I was wrong. We're not doing that.
I guess this isn't happening. I meant next year.
You know, it's like when you're going to a fight or something, because, you know, I'm in tons of those. And you think you have, like, an army behind you. You're like, yeah, you know, like, we're going to get you this year. And then slowly, like, everyone behind you is just, like, walking away and, like, realizing there is no, you're not going to win this fight. And then it's just you standing there like, I guess maybe we'll get you next year. Since this isn't happening this year, clearly.
You're lucky I feel a slight nap coming on and I'm a little tired.
Right.
Because if I was at my
game, little lethargic, and if I weren't, boy, would I, we'd get you.
So you think about
that.
That's
how it felt.
Well, now to look at the flip side now, where were you when they finally went, and in many ways, I hate saying this, but I think it's true. In many ways, I think the ALCS was the World Series. It was the ultimate revenge from the year before. It was the Yankees. We were finally beating them. We were the ones moving on. They were the ones taking a seat.
Absolutely.
So beating the Cardinals, and the Cardinals kind of went down like a tent in a stiff breeze. I mean, they really
wasn't
much.
Yeah, I mean, they
there.
Didn't even. It's almost like they wanted us to win. You know, it was kind of a letdown. I even remember, you know, after the Red Sox won the World Series, just to jump ahead for a second, I was in college. I went to Northeastern University, and it was my freshman year of college. and, you know, give a college kid, any college kid, alcohol and a reason to stream, you know, they go nuts. So everyone was just going toward, you know, Kenmore Square and Fenway Park and just ready to, like, scream because the Red Sox finally won the World Series. Except they, like, slowly realized they didn't really know what they wanted to scream. They're like, you know, go Red Sox. But then they're like, the Cardinals, I mean, what do we say about them? So finally, of course, after 20 minutes of confusion, someone started a Yankee stuff chant. Which is just, you know, it's just gold anywhere. You just throw that in at, you know, weddings, funerals, anywhere, and people just get all riled up. So a Yankee stuff chant broke out after beating the Cardinals in the World Series. Because no one knew what else to do. But that's because the ALCS is just such a bigger deal in a lot of ways. And I don't know if it is for, you know, maybe like older generations of Red Sox fans. I remember growing up, my dad would say, like, you know, it's like, the Red Sox don't win, then you, in the World Series, you cheer for the American League team. I'm like, why would you do that? We hate everyone. And he was like, no, you know, like, it was a thing when I was growing up, like, you cheer for your league. And that's just something I feel like is completely lost now. Like, I never cheer for, you know, I mean, unless it, I had, like, you know, if they beat us, I don't see myself usually, except for some occasions, cheering for that team. So I don't know if it's different that maybe back then, you know, for some older generations of Red Sox fans, that maybe the World Series is a bigger deal, and obviously they've lived longer, so they've gone through more. But for me personally, the ALCS was a bigger deal and just felt so good because no one really hated the Cardinals,
right.
But everyone hated the Yankees. And, you know, nothing brings people together more than just pure hatred. you know, forget love. It's actually, I think, hate that bonds us.
Exactly, I think so. Hey, you know, that's what Germany tried to get the whole world rallied behind that at one point. So it's...
yes, I think. Wait, have we gone down that? Have we gone down that path?
I know. usually you make the jump from Red Sox Yankees to World War II. That's usually the progression.
Yes.
There, you jump back to famous
just,
battles.
Yes, that's the usual progression of things.
Exactly, that's where we go.
Yeah, but I think the ALCS is definitely a bigger deal. And just remember being so, just like so happy and just wanting to throw it in so many people's faces, you know? Even though really historically it wasn't, you know, I know in that moment it was awesome. And even still, I'm sure for Yankee fans it pains them. But I don't know, for me it just felt like that was just everything at the moment.
It was, and it was almost as if, and you could not have scripted it better, because I say this so much, but it's true. If after that Aaron Boone home run, if the baseball gods came to you, and the baseball gods, of course, you realize are basically Peter Gammons and his friends.
Right.
If they had come to you and said, Amara, how can we make this up to you? What can we do in 2004? You would probably say, you might first spout out some horrible things about people being offed or iced or something like that, but
yeah,
afterwards...
few people I'd like to get rid of first.
Exactly. Can I get my list first? Can we go through that?
Wait, I have it somewhere.
Exactly. I've been working on this for a number of years. But you would most likely say, what exactly as it transpired, you would say something like, look, I want to go three. Let them take the first three. Let them be inches away from finishing us. Let them be
right.
So close they can taste it. And then
right.
I want to just ram it down their throats. And then I want to win it all on their turf. And that's what happened. That's
right.
What makes that so beautiful.
And what's so funny is that I wouldn't even have, like, if you gave me the option, I mean, if you asked me, like, if the baseball god came to me and said, like, what do you want? I don't even think I would have come up with that because I'm just not that smart. Like, I would have been like, I don't know, you just probably should sweep them, and yeah, that would be embarrassing. I wouldn't have even thought, because, I mean, to us, this was just another disappointment happening, but at least this time we knew it was happening, you
right.
know?
Right.
We're like, okay, we're not going to win, it's just, they're just going to sweep us, at least we know we're losing, you
right.
know? It's that in-between that kills you, when you're like, are we losing or are we winning? I can't tell, like, I don't know what's going to happen, and then you of course, lose, usually, but... At least I was like, all right, we're losing, but that's just, in a way, you've kind of accepted some sort of defeat, and you feel like you're on the same page with the baseball gods, and you're like, I get it.
Right.
This just isn't our year. So it didn't even occur to me to just toy with them, because I mean, that's what always happens to us. Toy with them and give them that little cushion and then come back and just destroy them and humiliate them. But I'm glad that someone else did think of that. You know, I'm glad I'm not a baseball god, because that was so much better.
It was phenomenal.
That was awesome.
It was probably the best approximation of MLB has that campaign when they get to the postseason. You can't script this, and that's probably the closest
right.
approximation. To your point, yeah, you probably, you know, the more I think about it, I think you may have convinced me on that one, because I think if you did go to the common Red Sox fan, they'd say, I just want to beat them. I don't care how we do it. Let's just do
right.
it.
You know? I want every game to be like how Game 3 was of the ALCS for the Yankees, 19-8.
Right.
Destroy them, you know. I think I would have thought that. I mean, I'm sure I would have loved like the close games and whatever. But I think if you just, you know, said, "What do you really want?" I just would have said, "Well, blood. Like, I just want to destroy them." So I'm glad that I wasn't the one writing the script, because this was so much better. Especially now when you talk to Yankees fans, you just feel so much better.
Now you're in you're in New York. That's where you work. That's where you
mm-hmm.
live. Is it? Do you pick up from them? I mean, you come to Boston, you sit in a bar, and you mention 2004, and they'll talk about it till the wheels fall off.
Right.
Do they view it the same there? I mean, do Yankees fans look back on that and from what you see, and do they say, do they carry that with them? Does that still hurt? Does it hurt them as much as it still makes us happy, or is it something they've already looked past?
To me, I kind of feel like Yankees fans, when it comes to 2004, they act kind of like that friend everyone has who says that they've gotten over an ex, but you know that they're still thinking about them constantly and probably stalking them on social media. I mean, not that they're that obsessed, but I think they do try to downplay it, but I think it does get under their skin. I mean, if you talk to a Yankees fan, they'll be like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. But they won't go into, like, the agonizing details so much or anything, because when you think about it, I mean, they've had some good times, so, like, you know, why focus on that one bad time?
Right.
But when you really, you know, you get into it with them, I do think that it does bother them. And I don't even know if it bothers them so much because they lost as much as that now we had a reason to talk about winning,
right.
which we never did before. You know what I mean? Because before, you know, they could say, oh, you know, 1918, they could always say that. And now they're like, well, what do we say? It was like when we didn't know what to say after the Red Sox won the World Series and beat the Cardinals, because what do you say about the Cardinals? Now they're like, well, how do we taunt them? They're like, oh, because you've only won one in the last 86 years. You know, it's like they had to come up with a new little thing that they could taunt us with. I think they're just more annoyed that now we could view ourselves in a positive light. And we weren't as, you know, the lovable losers, I guess, in a way. We were, not that they loved us, but I think that's what really bothered them, is that it was, the psyche was different, more so than even the losing, if that makes sense.
It does, and it's very interesting that you mentioned the psyche and the lovable losers, because the next question I had pertained to how we've changed as Red Sox Nation. I use the religious we.
Right.
We've, as I mentioned in the barely sober intro here, we, over the past 10 years, Boston Red Sox fans have seen 3 World Series victories, which is, frankly, 3 more than I ever thought I'd see in my lifetime anyways. It almost has been kind
right.
of an embarrassment of riches. Do you think, I want to ask you this from 2 perspectives. One is your own perspective, and then one is, and the other is stepping back and looking in your day-to-day and interacting with sports writers and people who live and breathe sports, if speaking to Red Sox Nation as a whole. But do you think, has 2004 and the subsequent success we had in 07 and 13, has it changed your view as a Red Sox fan? Are we spoiled? Does it raise the bar for success too high? How are you today as a Red Sox fan different than where you were, say, before 2004 happened?
Yeah, I think... And it's weird, because I was thinking about this recently, and I think part of it, I mean, I do think that Red Sox fans, this is what's funny, is that I don't know if maybe this is just me, but I feel like as much as one thing that kind of binded Red Sox fans was that lovable losers mentality, I think the other part of it, and people didn't focus as much on this because we were always losing, was that I think there always still was like a sense of hope. Because the thing is, it's like Red Sox fans wouldn't get down at a game and shut off the TV. You know, they keep watching. Because I think part of them thought, well, what if we do win? You know, like, I don't want to miss it.
Right.
So I think as much as Red Sox fans are negative, there was that small part that we almost didn't even want to admit was, like, slightly positive, in that we thought, well, maybe this year will be, you know, like, maybe we will win. But we just buried it so deep down because we were just so used to just getting punched in the nuts so much. So I do think that was still kind of flickering beneath the surface. And I just think it comes out a little bit more now where people say, oh, well, we're down, but remember in 2004 we came back. So,
right.
And then if we still lose, they say, all right, well, you know, maybe we could have at least won. It's not so, we're not so quick to say, well, obviously we're going to lose because we're Red Sox fans.
Right.
I just a little bit more vocal about, like, that small part of us that thought, I'm not going to turn the TV off quite yet because maybe they'll come back. Maybe something will happen. It's kind of that, you know, that love-hate relationship that Red Sox fans have with the Red Sox and also just, I think, with themselves. But I think the thing that's changed the most, and I don't know if this is just one thing that I've noticed, is that we just don't complain as much to people who aren't Red Sox fans anymore because you can't really get away with it anymore. Because if you try to complain to someone else, they'll be like, shut the hell up. Like,
yes.
You won three World Series. Like, you know, like, we haven't won anything. Like, what are you guys talking about? You're always, like, consistently, I mean, usually, like, close to at least being in the playoffs. And so you can't really get away with it before, whereas before you could be like, I'm a Red Sox fan, and you didn't have to say anything else. People would be like, oh, my God, can I buy you a drink? Like, are you okay? As if you just said, like, you know, my uncle just died.
Exactly.
So now I just think that it's tougher to get away with it because people, in a way, and I hate saying this, but we have, for a lot of people, become the new Yankees. You know, we're winning a lot. We're consistently in there. And, you know, we get a lot of media attention, whether we're winning or losing. So we're in your face a lot.
Right.
People who are outside of Yankees Red Sox, I mean, they just get sick of a lot of it. I think, you know, when the games are good, it's definitely, obviously, it's exciting, it's fun. But you can't play the poor me card anymore because people aren't buying it.
Right.
People love hating, and now they can hate us too. it's okay, I think, for them to say that, you know?
I
don't know for you how it's changed, but I feel like the two things I've noticed is just a little bit more outwardly speaking about the hope that I think we've all had, and then you just can't play the poor me card as much anymore, even if you are getting kicked in the nuts currently.
Right. And I think you raise a good point because I do think that other teams, I mean, if you talk to a Pirates fan or something, or an Astros fan, I'm sure they'd say, hey, look, buddy, I got no time to listen to you whine about, you know, not making the playoffs this year or finishing in last place or Bobby Valentine.
Half the time, people don't even know the Pirates are a team if you go to some places. You know,
right.
They're the Pirates. I mean, that's, you know, I remember when I worked for the Red Sox, sometimes we'd play the game like, you know, like least memorable state. We play, like, least memorable baseball teams. And, like, one of them for me was always, like, the Pirates. For some reason, if I had to list all the teams, I'd always forget to list the Pirates. And then the Reds. I sometimes gloss over the Reds, like, as if they're just not even existing. Which, obviously, in other places, they're, you know, they're huge. But just, for some reason, those are two teams that I would just, like, they'd be like the, and the Pirates, you know? So, yeah, but those people, I mean, a lot of these other fans, obviously, they want to win. So we can't really complain so much to them. You know, we think everything revolves around us in a lot of ways. Because self-deprecation in a lot of ways is just kind of extended narcissism.
Right.
So to us, we're like always view ourselves as like, oh my God, like this is so terrible. Even this season, you know, a lot of ways it's like, oh my God, I can't believe we're so bad, and then you have to look back and say, oh, wait, no, we just won a World Series.
Exactly.
And sometimes I only remember that when I'm reading an article and they say, World Series champion Boston Red Sox. I'm like, oh, right, we did that last year. Huh. Like, because I just, when I see that, I associate it with, like, now. So it's just, it's funny, but I do think that other people are just, you know, in a lot of ways just sick of it. So they're like, all right, guys, come on.
No, I think that's a good point.
Enough's enough.
Like, yeah.
You know.
Save some for the rest of us, man.
Right. This is what's about me, and again, I don't know, because I feel like sometimes when I talk about these things, I feel like I'm admitting some, like, disgusting, like, thought. But after we won the World Series again, I know I roll everyone else, I remember thinking, I'm like, I hope we don't win in 2014. And I can't even believe I thought that, but it was because I'm like, I don't want everyone to hate. Like, I want it to be okay that I can complain about stuff. I don't want to keep, and I don't even know why. Like, that's just, I think part of me was longing for the, sometimes the old days of associating with being that person that could just be like, oh, I'm a Red Sox fan, oh, this sucks, you know. And not being able to do that as openly anymore.
Right.
Part of me is like, I don't want to win next year. I want someone else to win so then we can win again in like a few years when things have died down.
Spread it around.
And that's what's so sick because I don't even know why I'm thinking like that. But I do think like that sometimes. And then, of course, when they're on, I'm like, why aren't you winning? Two things that are different for me are, you know, obviously I feel like we can't really get away with complaining anymore. And I just feel like people always now are a little bit, they're not as afraid to vocalize having hope in something. Where before, I think they're almost afraid to say something. And now they're just, it comes a little bit easier. Well, you know, in 2004 we came back. I mean, it's funny because it's actually gone across just different, you know, different sports even. I mean, I think it might have been, I actually don't really like hockey. I just put up with it. And I work in sports, so, like, I have to just, you know, kind of deal with it. I also partially blame the Boston Bruins for not getting a World Series ring, which I'll get into some other time, but or later. So I don't, like, love hockey, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Rangers, when they were down this season, were saying, you know, well, you know, the Red Sox came back, so, you know, why can't we come back and win, you know, Stanley Cup. So it's something that it's not even just a Boston thing. It's other sports teams have mentioned it before, or players, and said, you know, hey, the Red Sox did this. You know, we could do something like that too. So it's funny the way it's kind of, it's not even just used for Red Sox fans. It's used for just a lot of players, I think, looking for any sort of hope when they feel like normally they'd feel a little bit hopeless.
I think the single greatest pop culture reference to the, and there's been a lot of them, to the Red Sox winning the World Series and how crazy it was, is that show that was on a number of years ago, Lost, where they're all trapped on the island.
Oh, I was obsessed with Lost. And, like, my problem is I can't not be obsessed with something. Like, I feel like once I really like something, it consumes me. So I was one of
those. Memo to all the men out there listening to this, just because.
I'm sorry. Don't think I'm crazy, even though I'm slightly crazy. No, I just mean, like, when I really like a show, like Lost especially, which is rooted in kind of, you don't really, like, casually watch Lost, although my parents did, which is why it was awesome talking to them about what they thought was happening. Because they just turn it off, and they turn to each other and shrug and be like, that was eventful, you know. Meanwhile, like, a smoke monster appeared, and you know, people, they're seeing dead people, and, like, my mom doesn't really, like, look into, like, all of that and really want to think too much about it, where I will just, like, rack my brain thinking about it. So I remember with Lost, I was so obsessed, because it's one of those shows that just kind of gets you hooked, and there are all these different mysteries, and, you know, I still sometimes want to, you know, shake my fist at Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof. But there was the episode in Lost where Jack Shepard, who is one of the, who's played by Matthew Fox, is like, I guess you'd call him the lead in Lost. You know, he was trapped on this island, and it was based in 2004. And they did try to keep it pretty, you know, consistent with the actual events that happened that year. And, you know, he's on an island, so he doesn't know what the heck's going on. And one of the characters, Ben Linus, kind of tells him all the things that have been going on in the outside world to convince Jack that he can contact the outside world and kind of prove that, you know, he is powerful and, you know, he's not, even though Jack doesn't know what's going on, you know, he knows what's going on. And to prove that, he says, you know, and for example, this year the Red Sox won the World Series, and Jack just starts cracking up hysterically because that is the most ridiculous thing you could say if you want me to believe that you have contact with the outside world, because that would never happen. And I feel like that's what people would say if you told them, you know, in 2003 even, like, in a year from now, this is what's going to happen. People would have just started laughing and be like, sure, buddy.
Right.
But as you probably know, then he proved it by showing him the footage of them winning the World Series at Last Out, and Jack, who in the show is supposed to be, you know, a Red Sox fan, the look on his face just says it all. Like, this can't, this must have been doctored. Like, this isn't, this was real. How did you crazy island folk do this? You know, like, you don't even, you barely even have, like, really good food, let alone, like, how did you make this brilliant tape where you pretend that the Red Sox win the World Series?
It's a very interesting pop culture moment because you have a character who, through the course of that show, has seen, you know, polar bears on tropical islands and
right,
visited
right,
by
right.
dead relatives suddenly appear before him. Yet
right.
it's the sight of the Red Sox winning the World Series. It's the most incredulous thing ever. That's the one thing he can't
right.
get his arms around. It's like,
yeah. It was like the other day when I was watching Jurassic Park, and I actually tweeted something about it. And I was watching the ending, which every, to me, Jurassic Park is just my world. And because I love dinosaurs. And the ending where there are the two velociraptors just coming at them from either side, and then the T-Rex famously comes and just, like, eats the velociraptors and saves the day, and the people get away. And I'm like, come on, like, that's not believable. Like, in every other scene, you heard the T-Rex coming from, like, miles away. And you don't even hear a giant dinosaur coming up to, like, save the day. You didn't even hear it. I mean, that was the point where I was like, this movie's a little silly. And that's how I felt it wasn't Lost. It's like, there are all these crazy things that are going on, and then the craziest thing for Jack was that, no, like, all right, I could believe all this other stuff, but I'm not believing this.
Yeah, this, now you've gone, what's next, flying machines?
Right, or it's the, like, I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan, but the Seinfeld episode where it's the Pigman episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Jerry says something like, well, maybe the pigman drives like a car or something, or has like a coupe or a two-door car. I forget the exact line. And Kramer goes, that'd be ridiculous. Like, you know, like, that's ridiculous. The pigman was fine. The idea of the pigman, but the fact that the pigman might have this specific car, he was like, grow up, you know, be realistic. Come on.
Well, looking at how... You know, and in between talking about hatred and booze, we've talked a lot about disbelief and how things have changed and how, you know, and to your point, if you did go back to someone in 2003 and said, look, I just stepped out of the DeLorean here. I'm from 2013. We've won the World Series three times. I mean, no one,
right.
it's science fiction. It's the kind of thing that wouldn't, no one would believe.
Right.
How have you, as a Red Sox fan, yourself changed in how you view the game? How are, you know, in how you were prior to that, in the wreckage of 2003, and how you are today in the last remnants of 2013 ticker tape? How have you yourself changed in how you view the game? And I guess any other way you want to talk to us about.
Right. I think... I don't know. It's kind of hard to capture because, in a way, you've been so immersed in the glory that's been the Red Sox for the past 10 years. In a way, I mean, as much as you remember it so vividly, what it was like losing, but you've grown a little bit used to just being in an atmosphere where that's not necessarily the norm or happening all the time. But it just seems to me that what I like more is that I can just appreciate baseball more as the sport instead of agonizing over being a Red Sox fan. So just being able to, even now, if the Red Sox are playing a team and say we lose, I can say, wow, like, that was a really good game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, if the Red Sox lost, it was just, how did we lose again? And then I would go through the minutia of, like, all the things that had to happen for us to lose. And now I can kind of look at a game a little bit more objectively and just say, listen, like, we lost, but, you know, that was really back and forth, or, you know, that was a really good game. And so I don't get as worked up over losses anymore. I mean, obviously big ones still, you know, are terrible. But you can also just kind of appreciate it a little bit more and just say, you know, as a baseball fan and not just a Red Sox fan, I thought that was a good game. It's kind of like how, at least I do, I assume some other Red Sox fans do, about Derek Jeter. You know, you can, and I'm, of course, bringing him up during the Derek Jeter retirement tour.
Yes.
But, you know, you can kind of hate something, but still kind of respect it. And that's kind of how I feel more about some of these games where, even though I kind of have to hate Derek Jeter in a way because he's a Yankee, you know, I respect him as a player and what he's done, and that's how I can view games now. It's like, even if I kind of hate that we lost, it's not as deep as a hatred for how we lost or what went, you know, how it went down. I don't know if you have a different way of looking at things now, if it's not, or if you're just as miserable as before, but for me, that's kind of changed a little bit.
Yeah, I like to think my misery just kind of continues unabated on a completely different wavelength.
Right.
That's one of those things. That's one of those things I'm trying to deal with. But I do agree. If anything, I was, you know how you have your happy drunks and your angry drunks. I'm sure you have those friends.
Sure.
Who are like, there's the person.
Me and me.
Yeah, exactly. Two sides of the coin. There are those friends.
Yes, there's the two different friends that you give them alcohol and it's like different ways of reacting.
Yeah,
to it.
And it becomes your burden. As their friend, you're out with them for the night and you kind of see where it's going. And maybe it's like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you're having a couple of drinks somewhere, you know this is going to be a long night, and you can see it unfolding. You're like, okay, this person is going to be luggage from midnight on. It's going to be my responsibility, all these things that come with it. I guess I was sort of like that in my fandom. I was the angry fan. I mean, I really, really took those losses hard. I really, every time they got so close and fell apart. And even things like when Pedro had a, back in 99, when he had a no-hitter going against they were the Devil Rays at the time. And on he had, I think, one out in the ninth, or maybe no outs in the ninth, but it was the ninth inning when John Flaherty, who was a former Red Sox utility guy slash catcher, I think he was a catcher, came up and knocked a single in. And it, the most unlikely, it was you knew it was going to happen. And when it did, I remember being so, I literally just had to walk around the neighborhood for a while. I was just so angry.
Yeah.
Just so bad. And I remember talking, my dad was still alive at the time, and I remember talking to him about it, and he'd say, you know, you're getting all worked up about these things. These millionaires are going back home to their, you know, 20-year-old girlfriends and mansions, and you're the one who's giving yourself an ulcer. I do still get worked up. I do still carry a lot of that with me, but as I'm fond of saying, I've already seen, and I've said it already in this podcast, I've seen 3 more World Series victories than I thought I would see in my lifetime. So I think that does kind of make a man a little more mellow, whether I'm conscious of it or not. I think, you know, you've hit the height of the roller coaster. And a lot of us forget. I think a lot of people, and you probably did the same thing too, you may have in 2004, as you saw the ALCS unfolding, you may have said, I know I said it, and you alluded earlier to the baseball gods, the gods we tend to pray when it can benefit us, when we need it the most.
Right.
That's when we turn to it. You know, and I'm sure I said, just give me this. I won't ask for anything else. Just give me this.
Right.
You know, but it doesn't go away. Then you get a taste of it, and you want a little bit more. And you know, so it's just the way it is. But that's how I've changed a bit. I mean, the intensity is still there, but I think had they never won and kept spiraling, if all these World Series attempts were near misses, I'd probably be in prison or in a straitjacket by now. I'm guessing.
Right. I mean, I think that it's also, you don't completely want to lose all of that either. As much as that sounds weird to say, because, you know, as much as I always say that, you know, if I hate you or if I love you, you're doing something right, because if I just am indifferent, then, you know, it's, you know, what's that? Then I really don't care. I think hating or loving, it's just either way you're passionate about something. So if you're freaking out about something or extremely pissed, or whether you're, you know, it's 2004 and you're elated, you're feeling something for the game. And I think that you don't, in a way, you always want to maintain that and not just go to complacency if things are just kind of, you know, humming along now and you're winning. You still want to be able to be that person who can still get that mad about something, because it means you still give a damn about it.
Right.
And you don't want to be, you know, again, and a lot of kids now, younger, I mean, all they know is that, you know, Red Sox fans are winning, you know, the Red Sox win. So it's like you don't want that, because I was a tour guide for the Red Sox, and I remember one of the things that used to drive me insane was, you know, like, we get people from all over the world, but one of the hardest groups was, you know, like, kids or Yankee fans, like, young Yankee fans who just think about, like, Yankees in the 90s and, like, all of the winning, and, you know, some of them would just be super disrespectful and, that's all they associate with. It's like they didn't really even, a lot of them didn't even necessarily care about baseball or like the players. They just like to brag that they were winning all the time. And I think part of me would worry, like, are we going to morph into that, you know? And a lot of the older Yankees fans were a lot more respectful and understood that you're not always winning and, you know, it's, you have streaks, but it comes and goes, even though as a, you know, obviously the franchise, the Yankees are uber successful. But you worry about that. You're like, oh, I don't want to be that person or have kids that just, they just don't really care because, you know, why do you have to care so much if you're always winning? You don't know what it's like to feel anything else or really feel, you know, I feel like when you hate something, at least you're feeling something.
Right.
And so having that contrast of hating and then loving and hating and loving, I think it does something to you as a fan, and you want to be able to feel that. And I worry, if anything, is that sometimes when I don't care about something as much, in a way, it's good because you're not getting so worked up. You know, I'm not like punching through things or like canceling plans because I know I'm going to be an asshole to everyone because the Red Sox just lost and I don't want to be an asshole to everyone. Or like the, just the crazy things that you would do. But then when you stop doing it, in a way, it's nice because you feel like you're maybe more of a like normal human being and member of society. But then part of you is like, wait, I want to care, you know? I don't want to lose that part of me that, like, gets really angry or, you know, like, rewinds and rewatches something terrible that happened just so I never forget how awful it was, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of back and forth. You don't want to lose that.
It's a good point. It's like being Bruce Banner and the Hulk, you know? Some people actually like it when the Hulk shows up. They're actually happy to see him. As long as he doesn't crash their car.
Right. I mean, I think I'd rather honestly be crazy angry about something than just, you know, feel nothing ever about any of it. Because that's part of as much as it destroys us, in some ways, it's also part of the fun of being a fan.
It is. And some great uplifting stuff we're touching on here. You know, anger, alcoholism, self-destruction. These are good. These are important themes. It's good to get these out in the open.
I thought we were supposed to be going for the Red Sox talking points, so I just was hitting all of them. But, yeah, I know, it's definitely, I think it's that, the back and forth, the, you know, the sweet and the sour, and a lot of people don't always experience that. They just kind of are along for the ride, but they don't really feel so deeply about everything.
Right, and I think that's...
And I'm sure they're completely normal, healthy people that are functioning. but
maybe,
not everyone
maybe
can
not.
Be like that. Yeah, maybe not, who knows.
Well, this is, and I joke about all the downbeat stuff. These are magical times to be in as a Red Sox fan. It's a good space to be in, and I do think I agree with you. I think, you know, I don't think anyone really, if you're a diehard fan, and you raise a good point when you say there are a lot of people who just kind of, in 2004 just kind of hopped on the bandwagon and came along for the ride. Oh, Red Sox winning?
Right.
I'll jump on this. Why not? Hey, this guy, yeah, my favorite player, it's this guy. You know, there are people who earned their stripes, who lived and died with this. You know, I remember my father taking me to games, and my father was a very genteel guy, a teetotaler, but I saw him totally lose his shit when the Red Sox would lose sometimes, you know, just because, you know, just because of how much frustration there was and that kind of beaten look you get about you. And I think a little part of that you always carry with you. It is what makes it interesting. And to your point, I think the day that you, you know, stop wanting to punch a truck because they lost is the day that, you know, you get to kind of check yourself, because that's part of, I think, as odd as it sounds, it's part of the fun of being a Red Sox fan for me.
Right. I mean, some of us, we just have to like torch for a little bit. I mean, I think that's part of it, because why else? And but there is a difference, too, between, you know, like the Red Sox at least more recently, kind of always, at least on the verge of, you know, like the playoffs and all that. So they kept you interested. It was just a matter of, you know, how it was all going to end. In before, again, it was, how is this going to blow up in my face?
Right.
And now it's a little bit more of, well, even right now with the Red Sox, I mean, they keep doing these like little like winning streaks, and it just annoys me, because I know it's the back and forth of, I just start, like, part of me starts thinking, what if they just started winning a lot, and then they came back, and they were in the playoffs, and then they won again, and just, you know, and again, you're going down the rabbit hole. it's easier for me to just try to think, like, no, nothing's happening. Like, they're losing. That's it. Like, it's just they're going to win, then they're going to lose, and win, they're going to lose. It's going to be 500 baseball or worse. But then there's that part of you that's like, what if, you know, they throw, like, three games together because that's, like, their thing. They'll just, like, win three games. And you're like, huh, that's interesting. Like, look at the score. You're like, huh. Close it. You're like, that's probably nothing. And then they'll win, like, one more game. You're like, all right, I see what you're doing here. Like, you're winning a few games. You're getting me on board. I'm not falling for this one. And then I just start winning a few more games. You're like, oh, crap. Like, I'm invested. I can't, you know, I can't even hide it now. I'm, like, openly excited about this. And then they just get swept. And you're like, oh, this is over. But it's funny. It's just a few games back, you know, here and there. Just your mood is up and down. Getting sucked in, wanting to abandon them. And, yeah, it really is. I mean, I hate to say it because it's been, like, beaten to death, but, you know, the, like, relationship where you're just kind of going back and forth and you can't really let go. And, you know, it is that kind of back and forth. Even when they're subpar, you know, even when you don't even think they have something special necessarily going on, there's always that part of you that's like, what if maybe I'll just check and see how they're doing? Because now it's easier for me to be removed because it's not all over every TV in New York, right. You know? Whereas in Boston, I mean, you would be like, you'd like leave your apartment and be like, I don't even want to know what's happening with the score. And like someone would walk by and hear Red Sox score. They'd be like, oh, they're winning like 2-0. You're like, fuck. Like I wanted to get away from this. You know, like there's no escaping it. But here, it's just you're farther away from everything. It's not on TV unless you seek out to go to a Red Sox bar, you know, for the most part. So, I mean, they're so wrapped up in New York about the Mets just being the Mets. Like, every year, the, like, story going into the season is, are the Mets not going to be the Mets this year? And then they always are. And then with the Yankees, it's like, you know, obviously the Yankees are going to be in the playoffs, the World Series, and then now everything's just blowing up. So they're so consumed with that. And there's so many more sports teams in New York. You know, there's so many options. Like, it must be nice, right? Just to have all these options. So I'm here, I'm a little bit sheltered from a lot of the Red Sox stuff and just Boston sports in general. So I can turn it off a little bit more. We're in Boston, I mean, you can't. There's no escape.
Right.
I mean, you might as well just build a hole or, like, you know, like some sort of shelter or something with no internet or anything if you want to get away. Because that's all you can really do.
And even then, you'd be down in the hole for about 5 minutes and be like, I wonder how the Red Sox are doing.
You're like, oh, should I get GameCast down here? I don't know.
Mara Grotzky, thank you very, very much for your time. Not following her on Twitter, you should be. AmaraGrauTski.
Yes.
And that's what you should be following.
I know. It's a weird name.
That's a triple word score in Yahtzee if you're paying attention, or Scrabble,
yeah.
I should say. That's
it's a bizarre. Yeah, I don't really know what my parents were thinking.
It's,
you know, I already hit you with Grotzky, and then my parents were like, you know what, I don't think that's weird enough. Let's just give her a name that no one has, and this is really weird. But, yes, Mara Grotzky.
Thank you very much for your trip down memory lane, for your time, and if we haven't frightened you off, we'll have you back sometime.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks for having me.